Hello and welcome to episode 45 of Meals World. I had to double check there. How are we all doing? I really miss coming here and speaking into the microphone and sharing all of my episodes with you and my guest interviews as well. This last month hasn't just been busy, but it's been full of so many new experiences that I wanted to soak in, and I'm not very good at just being in the moment. I'm always just waiting for the next goal or the next project to work on. I'm at home now in Gibraltar to help out a hospital here, in the hospital over here. Of course, Radhika is with me, and it's a first time traveling. It's a first time staying in my parents' house and leaving me for all these hours when I'm at work. Balancing life as a mother and as a doctor is very tough. In fact, it's 4:30 a.m. and I'm recording this in the living room with the doors closed, hoping that it doesn't wake up Radhika. So I hope I can actually get through this introduction without being interrupted. But yeah, this is another challenge that I'm taking head on, and I'm sure I'll learn a hell of a lot along the way. And I hope I can share this with you. And I'm sure there are lots of mothers who listen to this episode as well, who've probably either gone through the same thing or may go through the same thing in the future. But I'll stop talking about myself because I can ramble on forever about what I'm doing. But I spoke to Lauren Curry this week, and I got in touch with her just before Christmas. It was Jolie from Pregnant and Screwed, the charity who's been working so hard over the last year, especially to help women who are pregnant in their work and making sure that they get all the rights they deserve. But Lauren is a trustee at Pregnant and Screwed, and she got in touch with me and told me about all the incredible work that she does and all the projects that she's created to help women become leaders in their fields and help them build their confidence. This conversation was just mind-blowing because we spoke about what it means to be a working woman in our current society and why history seems to be repeating itself. When we talk about women's rights, when we talk about the gender pay gap, and also Lauren is very humble, but she has achieved a lot and she's incredibly ambitious, and I admire all the work that she does. So I hope you enjoy this conversation. Welcome to the show, Lauren. This is take two of the podcast. Last time I went on and rambled on about how I hate the snow and I can't believe you're in Sweden. But I'll try not to talk about my own personal feelings about the weather right now, and I'll go straight into talking about you, Lauren. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm great, Mina. It's super lovely to be here, especially take two. Always happy to be here.
it's always nice to talk to yourself and other women in the stuff, the kind of things that we're trying to do, Lauren, because I feel like every day I'm just either breastfeeding or nappy changing. Mm. And I have all these ideas and things I want to talk about. And to speak to people like you, I get the energy and it sort of keeps me going every week. And this is why I love the podcast. Like every week someone comes and like charges my batteries up.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, you want to build something that also serves you, right? That's where a lot of good ideas start. So if it's serving you, then you know you're onto something.
Lauren, I want to start off the conversation by just telling my listeners that you are very ambitious and you will always achieve what you put your head to, and that's something I've noticed. And you know, the more I research the things that you've done, the more I even speak to you, even on like WhatsApp, and I realize like the drive that you have to not just create a change that you feel is needed, but also learn along the way. And I think that's the most admirable thing about you, Lauren, is that you're so willing to learn and then take that on. And I just want to ask you a little bit about Upfront. Mm-hmm. Because I know that when you say it and you're so humble about it, Lauren, but when people research this, they'll actually be able to see the impact that this has had. And I'll let you talk about it because I'm just fangirling right now.
Oh, you're making me blush. Thank you, Mina. And it's well timed because it was Upfront's fifth birthday yesterday, so I had a bit of a moment of thinking, wow, 5 years, that's a long time. Where did it start and where is it now? So that story's very fresh in my head. And, you know, the short version is there came a point in my career, probably, you know, 4 or 5 years in, where I was getting invited to speak on stages. And I realised that is something that is a huge privilege and a responsibility, and it was putting me in a position of power and influence that I hadn't quite experienced before. And then my second realization was that most of the time in those spaces, I would be the only woman speaking at the conference or on the panel. Usually all the people on the program would be white. And, you know, in my complete naivety, I just couldn't understand why that was happening. So I'm thinking, well, I know lots of brilliant women, people of colour, black women, gay women. You know, where are they? Why are they not here telling their stories, shouting about their work, sharing their opinions with the world? And that was the day that I started my journey, which will be a lifelong journey of understanding intersectionality and the role that race and class and wealth play in these circumstances. And I was at one specific conference where it was the day that tipped me over the edge, if you like, when I decided, okay, it's time to stop complaining about this and try and do something about it. And I always try and follow Swiss Miss as a designer. I'm a big fan of, she's the founder of Creative Mornings, Tina Ross Eisenberg, and she talks about you're only allowed to complain 3 times and then you have to try and fix it. So that day came and I decided to talk about the problem in my talk and kind of address the elephant in the room that I'd been the only woman who'd stood in front of the audience that day. And I then put a post-it note in the toilets at the venue that said, are you a woman who'd like to speak on stage? Tell me about it. And I ended up having lots of interesting conversations that day, in person and online, with people of all genders talking to me about their fear of public speaking, their fear of visibility, that one time they tried and it didn't go well and they're terrified to ever try again. And I was struck by, of course, how personal it is, how nuanced it is, the big role that intersectionality plays, but also this kind of repeating pattern of people are just really shit scared to stand on a stage. Like, of course we are. It's not normal to be stood in a wide open space alone with a sea of human beings staring directly at you in silence. You know, we're not set up to be happy in that situation. And it struck me that, you know, in our professional lives, when we want to gain a new skill or do something we've never done before, we go on a course, we might shadow somebody, we might get training. But if you want to be a public speaker, the first time you're on that stage is the first time you're on it. And that makes no sense. Like, why isn't there a way to kind of dip your toe in the water? So I invented one. This was where the premise of Upfront came from. It started as a campaign, if you like, a movement in its grandest form, on let's invite speakers to have big sofas on stage with them so that people with stage fright can just sit on the sofa and chill and feel what it feels like to be on the other side. Understand that it's not that scary. Understand there are ways to regulate your heart rate so your breathing slows down. Recognize that the speaker who stood on stage beside you, who you thought was just naturally very confident, is also nervous. So I tried it out, and you know, the first time we did it was at a conference called Silicon Beach 5 years ago. We sent an email to everybody who'd bought a ticket and said, who wants to come on stage with Lauren? This is the deal. And we had, I think, over 30 people reply and say, I want a seat on stage. So that was my first prototype. Okay, there's demand for this. So we got some extra deck chairs, had the conversation. I was able to then, of course, talk to them afterwards, talk to the audience afterwards, talk to the conference organizer afterwards. And, you know, there was no doubt that I was onto something. It was very transformative for the people who took part. The audience were forced to, you know, meet their biases that they probably hadn't thought about before. Like, why is it weird that there's a woman up there who's under the age of 20? Why is it weird that there's 2 women up there who are over the age of 50? Like, why is it weird that there's 3 brown people up there? You know, whatever that might look like. So I then kind of took that premise and designed a way for anybody to do this. So then my mission was, how do we get a couch on every single stage around the world, from the Facebook conferences to the UN, and we speed up that journey that people go on to feel confident in that environment. And of course, it's not about we all need to become TED speakers, far from it. But it is about demystifying something that right now is very inaccessible and, let's be honest, elitist most of the time. So I did that for a bit and it was brilliant. But of course, it wasn't a business. There was no money. I had people volunteer who would help me kind of organise the logistics of the couch. And I used to post pillows to the venue in different countries around the world. My mum made me upfront pillowcases. And then it started to shift because the more and more I spoke to the people who sat on the couch, they were so hungry for more. You know, they were like, what do I do now? Do you have a book or a podcast or a course? And I was like, no, I have none of those things. So that was when I decided to design a workshop. And for a long time, that workshop was 1 or 2 days. I would rent a venue, come along, buy a ticket. They were for women only, not because it's only women who suffer, who have a difficult relationship with confidence, but because I'm very interested in the gender particular challenges that come with confidence when you identify as a woman. So those workshops would sell out every time. And just last summer, I turned that workshop into an online version, which actually just happily coincided with COVID. It wasn't a response to COVID. I'd always wanted to build an online version because up until then it had been very London-centric, just because that was where I was based. And the online version is a 6-week course. And since August, we've had 500 women go through the course. And I'm in absolute awe and so overwhelmed by how well it's gone, like the power of the bond. So we call them bonds. The bond is the collective noun for a group of women, which I just love. So we're on third bond is in full swing. The fourth bond is going to open in the summer. And it's amazing. And again, what happened with the first bond is they graduated and they were like, what happens now? Like, I need more. So
I was going to say, like, surely, so you start off with the couch and up front and then you offer this thing online. And then I'm just imagining myself going through this process, like sitting next to Lauren on the stage. Okay, great. Okay, then I go into a bond. Yeah. Great. Then I'll be like, I want more. So what do you do? So in these bonds, Lauren, what kind of training do you offer them? And also, how do you empower women to sort of translate that into something that will allow them to, for example, make money or build a career out of? Because I think that's where a lot of women get stuck. Mm-hmm. And I'm talking about women in particular because I feel that the people I've spoken to, and in my particular case as well, when we find the thing that we love, or there's campaigning, activism, or speaking on a stage, we're always willing to just say, okay, I'll do it for free. I'll keep going. I'm just going to try this out. But it never actually materializes into something that you can make as your full-time job, because ultimately money has to come on the table. So how do you empower these women to say, okay, I can actually make this my full-time job and leave the job on the side that I never really liked in the first place?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, the bonds are, you know, for anybody listening, the bonds are intentionally open to everybody. So we have stay-at-home mums, we have students, we have women who are looking for work, we have CEOs, we have team leads, we have people in corporate jobs, we have freelancers, entrepreneurs. So there is an element of there's definitely a trend around when you go through the bond. There is a sometimes it's about starting a business. Other times it might be, I want to work in a different sector. I want to do something totally different. And kind of where that, the journey that I take them on is kind of based upon a few key pillars. And then the first one is this truth that the problem does not lie with you. The problem lies with the system and the society and the systems that we operate and work and live in. Now, the majority of women growing up since childhood have been socially conditioned to believe that women have a particular role to play in a particular way. and that is not conducive with ambition, leadership, storytelling, power, challenging the status quo, standing up for yourself. Okay, so what might that look like? That might look like being told not to be a show-off. It might look like being told being really focused on being liked, being nice to everybody, making sure that everybody likes you. You know, and that's a whole, you know, there's people doing PhDs on this stuff. There's tons and tons of data that shows us that that shows up for different genders in very different ways. And what that means is we end up with whole populations of women who are moving through the world thinking, fuck, I just need to put myself out there. I just need to speak up a bit, and I just need to get a grip. And, you know, what's wrong with me? Why am I finding this so difficult? Why is everybody interrupting me? Why is nobody listening? Why does the idea get taken seriously when somebody else says it, when I've just said the exact same thing? And we don't connect the dots, and that it's not about you as an individual. It's not a problem with you. It's a problem with the patriarchy conditioning that favours a white male perspective. They are overrepresented in every field of society. They're overrepresented on radio, on TV, on stage, in literature, in music, in theatre, in pop, you know, you name it, they're overrepresented. So it's very difficult for somebody who does not see themselves reflecting back at them to imagine that one day they could be that thing. So that's why our motto and mantra is you can't be what you can't see. And that's, you know, not original to us. There's lots of brilliant women who have said that phrase over the years. But that the second pillar is where that comes in, and it's about stepping into your power, finding a confidence that it might be soft, it might be gentle, it might be quiet, and it's still confidence, and it's still power. Mm. And when you do that, doing it in a way, I talk about building ladders around yourself. So you're doing that in a way that is about whose voices are we not hearing? Who's not in this room? And how can I lift others and bring others with me? And that's when we also think about privilege and race, and how important it is to really take those two factors. You know, those two factors are at the core of this problem. You know, this can't be about getting more white middle class women on stage. That would not be success. That would not be tackling the problem at its root. So yeah, a lot. It's a lot about unlearning. Like, what do I need to unlearn to believe that it's okay for me to send an email that's not full of emojis and exclamation marks?
Hmm. Lauren, you are working with women to allow them to understand the power that they have, right? Every individual has their own skill set, their own talent that can shine through the world. And I really believe that. Forget women, every individual on this planet has something to give back to society. You now are at a stage where you are working with other women to empower them. And you talk about how you want to make sure that they're not undermined in any setting, or they don't feel like they don't have the right to say anything. Were you in this position as well at some point? And I ask this, Lauren, because you speak with such conviction and you speak with such confidence. And I want to know, like, has this always been something that you felt, or were you in a position of feeling that you didn't have that power?
It's a very, I mean, of course you're going to ask me this because, you know, I appreciate that in many ways I am confident and I am articulate, and, you know, the important thing to, the reason why it's a good question is because the reason I am those things is because I've learned to be those things. I've taught myself how to be confident in a way that feels really good for me, and that will be different to how you're confident and what makes you feel good and powerful. So, you know, the headline there is, it's something that anybody can learn. It's not something that you are born with. It's not something that is innate. It's something that you can learn the same way you learn to play basketball, the same way you learn to breastfeed. Like, it's a skill that we learn.
Although breastfeeding is much more painful to learn than any of the other skills you mentioned.
Breastfeeding is extremely, extremely difficult skill to learn. And maybe that's a bad example, because often there are factors that you can't control and it doesn't work out. But if you've ever tried to learn, as I know you have, it's hard. But it's also important to my personality fits with society's version of confidence, which is enthusiastic, bubbly, on the extroverted side. You know, I'm white, I'm pretty, in inverted commas. You know, I'm palatable in a way that if I was, you know, an oversized 66-year-old gay black woman, then I wouldn't be. And that's just the way the world is. And that's, of course, why we need to have these conversations and recognise the huge role that race plays in this conversation. So, you know, I think that's one way why it's been easy for me to kind of find my groove in that. The other reason is I've been doing this for over 10 years and I love it. I love talking on stage. I love talking to people like you who ask me interesting questions. I love telling stories. Like, this is very much in my comfort zone. I did do stand-up comedy a few years ago as an exercise of how can I take this and push it to a place where I would not be confident and not be comfortable. And I was absolutely terrified, so terrified, felt sick all day. It was just, but I absolutely loved it. I loved it, loved it, loved it. And was all like, I've got a 6-minute set now, I'm going to go and do some comedy. And then I got pregnant. So that's been on a 3-year hold. But maybe one day, I can send you the link, it's on the internet. You can.
I was going to say, Lauren, I need to watch this. Lauren, you made a very good point earlier on about unlearning everything and then sort of having that reset button, right, to start again. And I recently had Mariam Namazi on my podcast. She's a campaign and activist as well, and her episode will be out either today or tomorrow. And we spoke about history repeating itself. Like, why are we seeing similar things happen again and again? I mean, when we saw the Black Lives Matter movement explode last year and became so prominent around the world, a part of me was thinking, well, Martin Luther King had to say the same thing like all those years ago. Now are we repeating the same thing again? Or, I mean, don't get me wrong, it's had a very positive impact. It is creating change. But the question is that why are we having to do this again? And will Radhika have to do the same thing in 10 or 20 years? And do you think it's because in society we focus more on putting a bandage over things rather than sort of cutting the cancer and then just starting from scratch again? Do you feel that the base at which we're building everything just needs to be completely removed and then just start from scratch?
Oh, that's a big question. And, you know, quite quickly you...
That wasn't in the script at all, but...
Quite quickly you get into, you know, you land at capitalism and it's really complicated. So I heard a quote recently which was, everything that needs to be said has been said, but you need to say it again because not everybody was listening. And I really like that. I mean, that makes sense to me in terms of helping me make sense of why is history repeating itself? Why is this change taking so long? But I think, you know, I definitely feel like as I'm getting older, I have a much more nuanced appreciation for how long deep lasting change takes. And, you know, yes, of course, we can look back at moments like Martin Luther King, but in the scale of humanity, that was actually very recently. Which on one hand is extremely painful and depressing, and on the other hand, it provides perspective on, you know, I genuinely think that the work that needs to happen around race equality is only just beginning to happen. Like, this And, you know, that's, I'm taking that lead from, I think it was Roxane Gay who I heard in conversation, and she was talking about this feels like the beginning of the like a new path that's never been trodden before, because now we have the internet and now we have the, you know, the technical capacity to make us connected in a way that we were never before. And I also think, you know, human beings are fallible. It's like, you know, how many humans think that the earth is still flat, you know? How many, I keep meeting women who think they can use tarot cards and crystals to make money come into their life. You know, these things are signals that we have a lot of work to do in terms of education and financial literacy across the masses. You know, a lot of this knowledge and information is still behind a gatekeeper of some sort. And, you know, I think we're only just starting to see the consequences of what happens when the internet removes that gatekeeper. Of course, you know, my bias and the lens that I look at this question through is as well, there is no denying that the leaders in formal positions of power, people who lead our governments and institutions, many of them are not fit for purpose, and many of them are severely overpaid, underqualified, and are not held accountable. And again, I think right now there is a shift in acknowledging that. It's probably always been that way, but because of the combination of conditions around the internet, Trump and the Conservatives being in at the same time, Black Lives Matter, you know, these factors, I think, combining with each other have led to these conversations happening in spaces where they never used to happen. And that's the thing that is giving me hope. And I do think a huge part of the reason that we will make change faster or in a more lasting way is because we will have more women in power, and we will have more women in positions of informal power, you know, whether that's activism, citizen-led change, entrepreneurship, you know, those numbers are all going up all the time. And I think that is a hugely positive sign.
You know, Lauren, you mentioned how the internet has been has played a positive role in bringing these changes about. And of course, we know the negative impacts of it as well, because what we see as positive, someone else might see as negative, and vice versa. Mm-hmm. Because obviously you've got some platforms where the right-wing media have amplified their voice and people are picking that up. So, you know, it can go either way. But I think the incredible thing that I've seen over the last week has been the farmers' protests in India, mm-hmm. How they were trying to censor a lot of the information going out the country to other parts of the world. And, you know, I didn't actually realise, Lauren, that this protest has almost a quarter of a billion people out there protesting. Mm-hmm. And it's been even bigger than the climate change, mm-hmm. The women marches, the climate change protests. It's so big, and there are still people who haven't heard mm-hmm. about it. And then you start to understand, well, actually, the government have censored mm-hmm. information leaving the borders. So how would people know? And that, to me, is really scary.
Yeah.
Because that one thing that allows the world to connect, the global community to come together and help other people, that's being cut mm-hmm. off. And you just think, well, if that happens, we would go back 20 years, 30 yeah. years. And this is always my worry, Lauren, you know, about, as I said, history repeating yeah. itself. Because the medium of the internet is one which should be there to help other people, but then it's also manipulated in a way that governments and leaders use it to yeah. their, well, an advantage.
Absolutely. And, you know, there's no doubt that COVID has taken feminism and the fight for gender equality back, you know, 10, 15 years minimum. Like, you know, we probably don't even know yet the extent of the damage that's been done. But my tendency is to not try and not dwell on that aspect and think about what can I do? Like, what can we learn from the past? Absolutely.
Yeah. And Lauren, your platform right now up front has obviously grown in the last 5 years. And I think it was yesterday or the day before when you mentioned on Instagram the 5 year anniversary. What you had put up on Instagram, I thought was so important, because you said that 5 years ago, I didn't have all these people on my email list. I didn't have this a group of women coming to my online service. And I think that's one thing that a lot of people need to appreciate, I would say. And, you know, something that Nishant and I were talking about the other day, we've listened to some podcasts with big bands and people who've become really successful. And, you know, they talk about how a lot of their life has been suffering and hard work, and then they have that little like bit of glorious moment, they achieve that milestone, then they can get back to the hard work, and then it just carries on like that. And I kind of feel that's what's happened to you as well.
I don't know if I've reached the milestone moment yet, but it feels, I can see why somebody could look at that post and think, you know, it's like the 10-year overnight success. And that's why I always try and be transparent about this, you know, the numbers and the time. And, you know, there's other things. Like, I have a YouTube channel. I've got 100 subscribers. Like, nobody knows it's there. Nobody cares. Like, it's, and I would hope that in another 5 years, I'm like, you know, my YouTube channel could be a big deal and it will be getting my message out to more people. But I think the most powerful analogy that I like to use for this stuff is to imagine every day you throw a tiny pebble across the fence. Now, that pebble might be a picture, a conversation, an Instagram post, a LinkedIn request, something that's about amplifying yourself and your network. At the end of a week, you've got a wee mountain of pebbles. Think how big that mountain of pebbles would be at the end of a year. And I really believe that this stuff is about consistency. Like, you look at the stats, there's like thousands and thousands of people start a blog every single minute. How many domain names get registered a minute because somebody has a genius brainwave? Like, starting is easy. It's the consistency of showing up. It might not be every day, because, you know, for many of us, that's not possible for very valid reasons. It's finding a way to show up regularly that feels good for you. And, you know, I think you're a beautiful example of that. It's like you are fighting epic battles in your professional life. You are raising a new baby, which you've never done before. But you've found a way to weave a consistent way of showing up into that through your podcast, through your Instagram channel.
And Lauren, to add to that as well, creating that life for myself has been very difficult. I've fallen flat on my face so many times. And this is something that I always try to celebrate that, though. Because I feel that when you've fallen on your face and you get up, I personally feel that every time that happens, I get up and I actually have more energy to do my work. So I really have learned to appreciate these moments you know, sometimes whether it's self-doubt or whether it's a concern or worry. And one of the things that grounds me, as you said, is that little mountain of pebbles, is that you just have to focus on growing that.
Yeah.
Because if you just leave it, it's just going to rot. And, you know, it's a wasted opportunity. And I also feel, Lauren, that, you know, the universe has provided me with some sort of platform. I feel it would be unfair to not use that in the right way, in a positive way to society. And I think that that's what I love about people like yourself and even Jolie and Pregnant and Screwed, who connected us together.
Hi, Jolie, we love you.
It's not just about creating something for yourself, it's to serve other people. And the purpose is there to serve other women and other members of society. But Lauren, what do you do when things do get overwhelming? Because I'm sure that happens.
Yeah, gosh, it happens all the time, weekly basis. What do I do when things go overwhelming? I tell somebody, talk about it, take a walk. I think I'm getting much smarter at realizing, like, oh, that's what's happening now, rather than sitting in it and not listening to myself. I think some, you know, obviously if that becomes too consistent, then it's time to take a break. It's time to take a day off, stay in bed all day, go and play in the snow, you know, whatever it might look like. But
yeah, playing in the snow doesn't sound fun at all.
Yeah, it's quite fun. And I think to your other point about, you know, using your platform and creating a positive change, you know, I just couldn't agree with it more. And I think, you know, for the first few businesses that I built, it was very much about change the world, have impact, create positivity. And I kind of missed the memo of you can do that and create wealth for yourself and other women at the same time. And I see a lot of women, and I know that naturally you will attract women who have that very, very strong pull around purpose and positive social change. And I think it's really important that we say really clearly that you can do both. You do not have to choose. The world needs more women to create wealth and hold wealth and share wealth if we are going to dismantle these systems that ultimately are held together by wealth, you know. And I think it's hugely exciting when we see some of the new ideas and startups that are coming into the world that are led by women that have got the potential to be, you know, billion pound companies, and they are led by women who are starting from this place of and you know, there's some brilliant examples. I can't remember his name now, which is annoying, but the CEO of the finance company who decided to take a salary cut, and in doing so made all of his workforce a millionaire. Another really good example is Timpsons. For those of you who are in the UK, Timpsons is a family business that's kind of been passed through generations, and they hire people who have been in prison. And, you know, when you listen to their CEO talk about leadership and how he designs their culture, it's all built around this idea of kindness. You know, when you work at Timpsons, you get a day off to go and see your kids' school play. When you work at Timpsons, you get access to a holiday home for as long as you need it for you and your family. And there's a whole bunch of different examples. So, you know, it's not a case of only women have the potential to create these new forms of power. Of course, we need everybody in all genders to do that. But the fire in my belly comes from seeing what, you know, we can see in women like Jacinda Ardern and AOC and Michelle Obama and Beyonce and, you know, Viola Davis, and women who are, I think, just changing the game. Like Arlen Hamilton is a VC. If you don't know her story, Minal, you must look her up, because you will just love it. And she essentially went from being homeless and sleeping on the floor in airports to having her own VC fund. And just this week, she's the first VC ever to open her fund to crowd, not explaining it amazingly well, but so that other people can be part of that fund for, like, super, you know, hardly any money at all. Basically democratizing access to that space. And, you know, she's changing the game. Like, and it's amazing.
And this is the thing, Laura, you just mentioned all these names, and like, I just felt like I just got goosebumps, because it's just a reminder that there are women out there creating big, big waves, and they are the ones who are up there, and they're showing us that we can actually get there as well. And it's all about them opening the doors and then leaving the door open for people to come and follow them as well behind. And I think that's something that we can see more of because of the internet. So going back to what we were saying about the internet having a positive impact on society, I feel like that's played a big role. Now, Lauren, you've got so much going on, and people can find out about what you're doing on your website as well, which I will put the link in the description. I feel like I could talk to you forever, but
we should have a take three. Do another one.
Yeah, we should. I want to ask you, what kind of legacy do you want to leave behind? You know, like in 20 years or 30 years, when Radhika's looking back at my podcast, I don't know if she'll be interested, but maybe she is. And she says, oh, this was Lauren, and now Lauren is doing this. So what kind of legacy do you want to leave behind?
Yeah, it's a big question. And, you know, I think I don't have the shiny, like a shiny elevator pitch that I've rehearsed. I think for me, I know that the work that I do and the conversations I have will lead to, I'm going to say millions, I'm going to be that bold, will lead to millions of women.
Yeah, put it out there, Laura. Put it out there in the universe.
Doing things, creating things, achieving things that they might not have thought possible before we cross paths in some way. And, you know, I think it's also important thinking about these women that we just mentioned. You know, some days our Instagram feed is full of these faces and you can think, oh, I'm just... the wave I'm making so tiny and small, or like I don't even have a bloody website, who am I kidding? And I think it's important to, you know, don't compare yourself to these women who have been on this journey, some for 20, 30 years. You know, don't compare yourself to people who have teams and teams of people behind them. You know, compare yourself to you. It's like, are you happy with the progress you're making? What do you think about the commitment that you've made? And absolutely look for people who are 3, 5, maybe even 10 years out from you. But yeah, in terms of legacy, you know, I think I want to be known as the person who, you know, genuinely built ladders around me and did that in a way that everybody else could copy me and they did the same.
I'm sure that will happen, Lauren. Not just that, probably much, much more than that as well. If anybody wants to get in touch with you or even join one of your bonds, your training, how can they do that, Lauren?
Yeah, I'd love that. So the best way is to follow me on Instagram and Twitter. My handle is _LaurenCurry_. So you just search my name, you'll find it. My website is laurencurry.co. And there you can sign up to my newsletter. Upfront also has a newsletter where we got more specific information about the bonds, but I talk about all that stuff and more on my Instagram and Twitter, so that's the best place to get me.
And your YouTube channel.
And my YouTube channel that nobody knows is there. You can chat to my mum in the comments.
Oh, thank you so much, Lauren, for your time. It's been so lovely to talk
to you. It's been such a pleasure, Minal. Thank you so much for the work that you do. I'm very happy to know you.
And thank you, dear listeners, for tuning in this week. And thank you, Lauren, as well, for joining me on the podcast. I've left all of Lauren's links in the show notes below. Do get in touch with her. She's very helpful and she's always willing to help and engage in any way possible. So I will see you all next week, and I hope you're all keeping well and you're all safe.